And welcome to another cynical supplement. I'm your host, Slugfest Cynic, and I'm the only one here this week. Nubron was sick, Durin was AWOL. I don't know. That's all I've got to say. Let's just crack on. I'm just going to be rapping here about a bit of news. I'm still waiting for Mario Odyssey to come out. It's my first full Mario game they're going to play from, well, I'm going to try from start to finish. Don't know how many, like, equivalent of stars I will get using sunshine parlance there, but I don't know, it's coming out in a couple days now. Also, Stranger Things is coming out in a couple days now, so there was a good argument to just like skip this week, but since those two things will be out soon and we'll probably be ending up talking about them on the next show, I thought I'd just do like a quick news catch up here, especially since I haven't necessarily been playing too much again, waiting for Mario. So a lot has happened over the last week, and I thought I may as well just rap about it. I'm going to be doing it pretty fast here. I know I'm probably not your only source of news out there in the video gaming world, but hey, that's what kind of what we do here, at least rap about news. So I may as well do so. Up here, out front, I will say first and foremost that I will not be discussing anything to do with any form of allegations of sexual abuse or any form of discrimination, etc., that's arisen over the last couple of weeks, both leveled at Naughty Dog and perhaps just as famously the NeoGAF creator Evil Lore. I won't be discussing it because that stuff should remain in the court of law. I actually kind of find it almost disgusting how people are essentially forming lynch mobs when, let's be clear here, like I'm not going to say that I think they're innocent. I'm just saying they're people should be considered innocent until proven guilty. That's how law works, you crazies. You should not just like immediately abandon people because someone accuses them of doing wrong. There's such things as misunderstandings, etc., let alone false accusations, which I will not claim that these are, because it takes a certain type of person to come forward in this kind of environment and make an accusation in the first place. But that said, people need to calm the fuck down and not jump to conclusions. You should let the people who know what they're doing, i.e. lawyers and police, sort this shit out before jumping all over people's cases and ruining people's lives. I won't be talking about that. I won't be talking about Naughty Dog, won't be talking about NeoGAF, won't be talking about anything else that's popped out in the last couple of weeks in those areas of interest for the few people out there who care. What I will be talking about, though, is a couple of sweet news announcements. I'm just going to go down in order of which I've listed this. This isn't necessarily the order of the most interesting to least interesting, so I may as well mix things up. Oculus. The Oculus Rift. Remember that company? Remember that VR company owned by Facebook? They're still doing things, and I won't say they're desperate, because these essentially are the plans they've laid out for years now, and the things they're doing are things we expected them to do. It's just that now that they're actually doing it, it's like, whoa, okay, whoa, I thought you'd already done that. Or, wow, you should have done that a couple of months ago, if not years ago. But anyway, Oculus, I think they're making good moves. I have nothing really against them as a company anymore, mostly because they seem to have like been humbled to a large extent by the last couple of months, which is always good to see in a corporation, as is evidenced by Sony for this generation. Humbling is good for you. Of course, it'll only take a couple of years, if not months, before they go back to being evil, just like Sony has, but whatever. Either way, Oculus has announced a $199 standalone VR headset that's essentially based on the Gear VR, technology and platform, and I believe we'll be playing the same games as Gear VR. But as the name says, it's standalone, which is kind of cool. It's definitely cheaper than, for example, getting your old Galaxy S7 and one of those Gear VR headsets, because you could sell that Galaxy X7 for a good like couple hundred bucks, which is all this goes for. And this is a dedicated device, so you don't have to worry about, hopefully, as much about battery life and overheating as you do with the Samsung phones. Assuming they do get the heating problem sorted, which I think is actually the largest problem with using phones for Gear VR, I think this is actually pretty cool. Like, I've always thought that, although like definitely a second tier experience, things like photo mode or viewing photos, 3D photos specifically, in Gear VR is spectacular. There's built-in apps for like world tours and like fireworks around the world, all that kind of stuff. And that is, as John Carmack has stated in the past, like the most high fidelity stuff you can see in VR today. And it's really something else to see. And just for that alone, I'd consider paying some money. Then you add 3D videos and the light selection of 3D games out there in the Gear VR platform, and maybe this is worth it for $200. Seems to have decent build quality. It's got built-in audio. It seems like an Oculus essentially, but with the addition of a processor and stuff, which is kind of cool. Actually, I take that back. There's no built-in audio. I'm looking at the images now. It's pretty much just a head strap that's actually very much like an old school not Gear VR, but Vive style head strap. It's actually a different head strap than before, which I think is fine. Like, honestly, the old head strap was over-engineered. Vive style head strap, though, with like slightly better build quality straps there, and your actual goggles. And it's a nice color. The image is in a gray white. It looks nice. Fit 2560 by 1440 resolution, which is pretty much exactly what you'd want. That's about the same resolution as a Galaxy S667. So you'll be getting decent video quality out of it. We'll see when reviews hit. Let's see if they've got, looking at the article now, is there any release date? I do not see a release date on this thing. I might be missing it, but I don't see a release date. Ships early next year is what we've got. I think it's cool. I don't know. Will it be successful? No clue. It's only just gotten to the point where you can just buy VR headsets from standard PC stores. Like, there's a store in Australia called PC Case Gear, and you can just go there and now order an HTC Vive instead of having to go through the whole HTC online ordering process. You can just walk into essentially a store and buy it on spot, which is what these things need to do to slowly gain traction. Now, to be fair, unlike this thing, the HTC Vive is $1,100 Australian dollars, and that's ridiculous. Like, I wouldn't necessarily pay that for a platform with barely anything I want to play on it at the moment. But you do, it's baby steps at this stage. You have to be in stores, it has to be low in cost, you have to have the right experiences on your platform, etc., etc. And this thing, you know, I'm not going to criticize it. It's a pretty cool step in the right direction and seems like a cool looking product. Also in Oculus news, we've got a permanent price drop to $399. And this is actually pretty insane, because not only do you get the headset, but you also get a second sensor, the two touch controllers, and seven games. Lucky's Tale, Medium, Toy Box, Quill, Dead and Buried, which I haven't heard of, Dragon Front, also I haven't heard of, and Robo Recall, which is actually pretty cool. That is an insane bundle, to be honest. Let me have a look if there's, yeah, it doesn't look like there's a time limit on it either. It's just straight up. Wow. Yeah. You the Oculus Rift $399 with touch controllers and seven games. That's pretty damn cool. I'm not going to lie. If it came out at that price, today would probably be a very different landscape if it came out at that price. With this kind of bundle, obviously they couldn't have done that. You know, the standard thing where the more you manufacture something, the cheaper it gets to manufacture, etc., etc. All the technology gets the cheaper, etc. But you know what? I think this lays the groundwork for their next iteration. If they do come up with an Oculus 2, specifically, everyone I believe is waiting for the same thing, which is wireless. If they do come out with that and it's at this price point, this is the kind of deal they're offering. Obviously, not the exact same deal, because they'll be more expensive. Piece of kit to produce, but say $450 instead of $399, maybe 500, but I don't think so. I think 399 is pretty much the price point to hit. But we hit this price with a higher end unit, and this sets the stage for that. That would be a big deal. But at the moment, hey, if you're still interested in that VR thing, which at this stage I wouldn't necessarily do just for games, but I do for development purposes. If you're into, for example, the real estate industry and so on, and want to develop some interesting or learning industry, develop some interesting applications using this piece of kit, this is pretty awesome. They're straight across the board. Like that for $399, this is, yeah, I can't. Again, can't say anything being negative about it. Aside from Oculus being essentially almost old news at this point, as crazy as that for me to say, there you go. It's straight up out and at a good price and something I could actually recommend to people. Personally, wouldn't get it, but there you go. Next up in news, again, this is in no particular order. So I really like this thing, but Shin Megami Tensei, for anyone who doesn't know, it is a series of video games from the guys over at Atlus, the series that spawned the famous Persona franchise and is pretty much a dark fantasy, generally modern day, kind of thing where humans are generally like taking control of demons and fighting other demons and humans, etc. Generally for like epic fantasy scale stuff, like the end of the universe or whatever. But in general, it's actually famous for being dungeon grindy, really difficult in some cases and for some iterations, really interesting plots, if not characters. Like the characters are usually quite flat, but the plots are usually quite interesting and quite deep, especially if you're into things like Christianic lore. But more importantly, like just they're just fucking high quality games with like really good soundtracks and pretty good looking for the platforms they've been on, etc. So Shin Megami Tensei is that series, and I've been a massive fan of it ever since Persona. I got into Persona and then branched off to Shin Megami Tensei from there. Even though I couldn't necessarily get myself to finish 4, Shin Megami Tensei for Switch has been announced to be, to no one's surprise, Shin Megami Tensei 5. That is really cool. It is Switch exclusive, which I personally am entirely unsurprised by, because that was the same for Shin Megami Tensei 4, which was a 3DS exclusive. But this seems, they had a trailer for it, a new trailer. It was in Japanese, so I couldn't necessarily understand it, but it seems like they're going for a very standard fare Shin Megami Tensei, where it's a normal modern world and then shit gets real, demons come out of nowhere and dude has to fight them. But it seems to be using something very similar, if not the identical, to the Persona 5 engine. So it looks really sharp. Well, it looks very anime. It's up to the individuals to determine whether they like the look of it, but I like the look of it. Almost, it's using that kind of engine, but it has more of a like a 2D layering kind of look to it. So it's not quite a full 3D. It's like a 2.5D. But straight up, it looks cool for what we've seen, but there's no release date yet. They originally announced it for this year and everyone laughed. So we'll see. But I bet it'll be out next year. Those guys turn things around pretty quickly and they haven't necessarily put up a recent game. Sorry, a new game. Persona 5 is not the same team. So it's not that crew, and therefore it could essentially be a group of guys who've had the time to develop this game. I'll probably pick it up. Straight up, I love my Switch, even though I've only played one game on it, and my second game buying for it, or actually two games on it, and the third game buying for it is coming out this Friday. I think it's a platform with a lot of potential, and big RPGs is exactly what I see on it. So let's move on. That's a cool thing. Next up, this was a big piece of news that floated last week, and everyone's discussed it to death, so I won't go too far into it, but Visceral Games, the creators of Dead Space, Dead Space 2, and unfortunately Dead Space 3 and Battlefield Hardline has been shut down. They were originally working with the ex-Uncharted series writer Amy Hennig to create a single-player action Star Wars game for EA. It was going to be a pretty cool thing, at least from everyone's, at least from the look of the one image they put out and the team behind it, especially with Amy Hennig in charge or of the writing team. I don't think she was the director or anything. But they went silent for a number of years. So essentially, aside from that one image we saw quite a while ago, no one really knew what was happening with the project. And apparently EA did some focus testing on it and shut it down. That's essentially how that went down in a pretty surprising and really quick turn of events last week. The interesting thing about this to me personally, because hey, you know what? I am not a very sentimental person. I'm very much a what have you done for me recently kind of thing. Especially when it comes to teams, large teams of people, because teams may have the same director over and over again, but really the team itself changes. Like most in this industry, like the video games industry, like there's a massive churn. There's people leaving teams, joining other teams, starting their own things, etc. quite frequently. It's very rare that you have, well, at least from my perspective, a person with a team for 10, 15 years. Like your 4 to 8 seems to be something that you see quite often, but beyond that, it just kind of goes all over the place. So the people who made Dead Space 1 probably, well, a large amount of them, especially the people with like creative power who were potentially powerful enough to start their own things, for example, or move to other projects and places, probably aren't there anymore. I'm not speaking from knowledge. I'm just saying this is just kind of how the industry works, and I'm guessing here. But especially if you look at the more recent games like Dead Space 3 and Battlefield Hardline, it's not like this Visceral is essentially the same Visceral as the one who brought us Dead Space 1. There could be. I don't know. That would be really sad to me personally if that was the case, considering how much quality they start off with and then what are they end up with. But yeah, I'm not particularly a sentimental person when it comes to Visceral games. That said, I feel sorry for people who've lost their jobs, but a lot of, large amount of them, to my understanding, are being shifted to other parts of EA. That's hopefully okay by them. Any form of instability in someone's life is always pretty terrifying, especially if you're, for example, if this is your full-time job, especially if you're like a single parent, etc. Like, I bet there's a lot of people in really rough spots because of this, but I don't know any of them personally, and also it's not necessarily a thing we can help at this stage. Like, this is a big corporation. This is what big corporations do. So to me, the interesting part of this whole deal is a statement that EA put out, which essentially said why they discontinued this game. Essentially, let's see if I can bring up the particulars of it. But we've got, we needed to pivot the design. We will maintain the stunning visuals. This is a quote by them. Authenticity in the Star Wars universe and focus on bringing Star Wars story to life. Importantly, we are shifting the game to be a broader experience that allows more variety and player agency, leaning into the capabilities of our Frostbite engine and reimagining central elements of the game to give players a Star Wars adventure of greater depth and breadth to explore. So keywords there would be more variety, player agency, Frostbite engine to some extent, and greater depth and breadth. Let me just make sure. Am I being crazy or... Yeah, no, this is... Okay, so Frostbite is being used for Anthem coming up from BioWare. That game looks freaking incredible, and it looks like essentially a Destiny clone. Not a Destiny clone, but it's using that formula and bringing it to a new universe with slightly different gameplay with mechs, etc. If I was to hear EA 2019, 2020, which is looking like the time period this is at maybe 2021, looking at a amount of depth and breadth of exploration, greater player agency, I would guess this would build on the Anthem concept, which could be freaking awesome in the Star Wars universe if they do it well, which I don't necessarily trust EA to do at this point, especially if you look at Mass Effect recently and pretty much any game they put out the last couple of years, honestly. Like, I'm trying to think of a good EA game recently and I'm drawing a blank. Maybe I'm just being crazy. I'm not talking about Battlefield, you know, like I'm not talking about the DICE team specifically. Like, they're their own thing. Battlefront is its own thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about single player experiences or cooperative experiences, and I just can't think of anything that's been particularly amazing. That said though, yeah, if they do a Destiny like thing that's like Anthem but in the Star Wars universe with a good team behind it, which is questionable in this stage, that could be freaking awesome. And do I think that's a good move for this project? personally, I'm a player of single player games. Like I like your Uncharted's, Last of Us. That's obviously the big two examples in this genre. But let me see, think of it, anything else. Witcher, if you're looking for something more open. Horizon Zero Dawn was a favorite of mine this year. Like big single player experiences are totally my jam. We will see if this is a good choice, because one hand, they could just be saying making open world as opposed to a linear experience like The Last of Us. And that's a interesting move and something I'm not necessarily entirely against because of how much I enjoyed Horizon this year, but I don't know if I can see that in the Star Wars universe. Like for example, any planet they choose aside from Coruscant, I can't really see any great benefit of like, oh wow, an open world game in Tatooine, like fucking what's there to see? I'm deep Star Wars historians or whatever the fuck you want to call them probably have like 8 million different planets they would love to see in this game. But considering we're looking at a world where this would be after the last of this trilogy of Star Wars, talking about like 2019 is the last of, no, 20, yeah, 2019, 2020 is when the last Star Wars movie of this trilogy is coming out. This is probably going to be 2020, 2021. So it had better be something. At that point, you'd probably want something nostalgic to go back to because of the ending of that trilogy. You probably don't want something new in the Star Wars universe at that point. You probably want something like, oh, wait, you know this place that you loved from either the trilogies just passed or the first trilogy, the Coruscant? You should see this game. If that's what this game does, that could be really interesting because everyone remembered, well, many people remembered the Prey 2 demo from many years ago, which is essentially just Bounty Hunter the game. If you're playing a bounty hunter in Coruscant, running around that fucking huge city and all that kind of stuff with like flying cars, and that could be really cool, even if, and especially if it's open world, actually, not just even, especially if it's open world. But I don't know, I'm just spitballing here. We won't see this thing for years. I just thought that was kind of interesting in that they've thought that massive single player games are no longer a thing. We will see when it comes to that, because if you look at like the biggest games of the last couple of years, we're looking at Zelda, fucking Witcher. Those are big ass single player fucking games. To be fair, you have like things like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is goddamn gigantic, and obviously you have League of Legends and Dota 2 still hanging out there in the background, making millions of dollars a month. But those are pretty ones like. They're kind of unique. They're their own thing. Like it's something I've learned as I read more and more about writing, and that there's like everything in humanity, you have a big, like if you think everything as a bell curve, you have a big chunk of things in the middle, and that's most likely where you're going to end up being. Some people in a very like a small fraction of the big chunk of people in the middle are maybe 25% to the left or right of the middle. And those people are considered great, amazing, and same with art. That art in the higher one standard deviation away from mean, two standard deviations away from mean, we're talking about like the edges of the bell curve. Those are great works of art. Things like The Witcher 3 are actually more like things like great games of this year, like, I don't know, Evil Within 2. And then you have the rarefied edges of the bell curve towards the far right and left ends. And there you have like the grand wonders of the world, like The Room, the movie, or on the one side of the bell curve. And then the other side of the bell curve, you have things like The Legends of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. A lot of people believe, like consider it that way. Or to me, Persona 4 and stuff like that. You have the verified edges. Unless you're that, you're not going to be like PUBG, LOL, or Dota. Like, let's be clear. Play a game that comes out nowadays is a total failure. Like, look at Lawbreakers, for fuck's sake. I don't think single player is dead. Destiny 2 is definitely successful. That's a great thing, but it's pretty much the only thing in consoles in that slice of the pie. Maybe, and when you add, Anthem to that, like, essentially melting pot, you have two big things in that melting pot, and that's already enough to start cornering the market. Because if you look at any other big market in gaming. You have shooters, you pretty much have Call of Duty, Battlefield. You have MMOs, you pretty much had WoW and Guild Wars, maybe a couple other Splinter MMOs like EverQuest. You pretty much just have two really massive things. Consoles, for a long time it was Sony and Microsoft, or before that was Sony and Nintendo. Like, you have essentially two big things, two big factions in many of the areas of like electronic entertainment. At least that's what history has shown so far. And I don't necessarily see adding a third, like this Star Wars game, into that Destiny-esque genre at 2021, which we don't even know what it's going to be like, is going to be a great move. I would say personally that if they were to go for something like a Coruscant Bounty Hunter simulator, that would be fucking cool. And that would do very well. Even if it was open world, if it was multiplayer, even better. But do they need to do a Destiny-esque game, which is very well could be what this is? I think that's a bad plan, personally. Anyway, let's move on. If anything, we can stop looking forward to seeing more of that Amy Hennig Star Wars game. Because it's gone, sadly. I'm not going to necessarily mourn for it that hard, aside from my reservations about teams and their changing over time. I'm just meaning like things like, being creative is hard. Like, you can't necessarily hit everything out of the park. Stephen King, who's one of the greatest writers of the modern era, even though he definitely doesn't consider himself so, has fucking had hits and misses. Like, I personally hated The Dark Tower, even though many people disagree with me. So yeah, I don't know. Amy Hennig is, it's not like everything she touches turned to gold. Everyone remembers Uncharted 3. Let's move on. Not that I hate her. I think she's great. I think she has potential. Kid. I say to one of the, whatever, I think she can do well. I'm just saying it wasn't necessarily the case that this would be definitely perfect as a game, and therefore I feel it's too early to mourn for something that you haven't even seen. Wow, I'm cynical today. Hey, earning my name. Self-confessed cynic indeed. Moving on. The Han Solo movie got its name, and it's freaking stupid. That's the next piece of news I've got written down this week. It's just called Solo. That's dumb. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. Like, it's a dumb freaking name. The guy playing Han Solo kind of looks like, he kind of looks pretty cool. He looks like he can pull it off. But we don't necessarily know too much about the movie, and I don't want to know too much about this movie. Should it exist? Probably not. I don't really need to see more of Han Solo, but hey, people love that guy, so why not? I'm not going to rain anyone's parade and cancel the thing, for example, if I had the power. But no, I think it's a pretty cool thing that I'm not particularly interested in personally, and has a dumb name. That's pretty much all I want to say. Let's move on. Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Remember that game? A couple months ago, just before E3, we had a big ramp up, and they zoomed in on the creator of Pokemon sitting over a drawing desk, drawing on a piece of paper, and he looked up to the camera and he said, he's announcing that the Switch Pokemon game is in development. Oh yeah, and there's this Pokemon Sun and Moon Ultra thing for the 3DS. And after that, pretty much all of us just went, okay, let's, I guess we're just not buying Pokemon this year. But it seems like, and this is me, I don't know, essentially eating crow here, probably. They're actually putting some damn effort into Pokemon Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon. And that's kind of crazy to me, because I didn't suspect this to happen, even though I probably should have, considering how much I liked the story from the first Sun and Moon games. But they're doubling down on story, of all things, for Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. And for people who don't know how these things usually go, the first in a new generation, for example, X and Y, are usually the more balanced, focused, and less build diverse, i.e. you have less options for your Pokemon. You have less trainers around the world to teach them new skills. You have balance problems usually because they rebalance in every generation, etc. So the first is usually rough, but it's also the first in a new generation, so it's the most exciting. But the truth has been for quite a long time that the second game in a new generation has always been the better video game of the two. And in the last couple of generations, the second game in generation also is the one where they've put more story in it. So in actuality, this could be the real stunner between the two halves of this generation. As much as I loved Pokemon Sun when I played it last year, Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon could be like real stunners this year. And the problem is, like, most people who are only mildly into Pokemon probably won't even pick these up. But I guess they understand that because that's how it's always been, essentially. And they're just cracking on with putting a story trailer out that actually kind of looked pretty damn cool. I think the new Pokemon designs look terrible. But as I said earlier, the balance of the second and a generation is usually fantastic, or way better than the first one, with way more options with your Pokemon. I'm going to pick up the other one of what I bought before. So I bought Sun last time, so I'll buy Ultra Moon this time. And overall, like, this could be freaking awesome. Like, I love the idea of more story in a damn Pokemon game. The last Pokemon game was awesome when it came to story. It was light, but it was heartfelt and really lovely. Like, it gave you really good feels. And this does more of that, but adds a little bit more drama, puts the people we've already learned to care about in danger, for example. This could be big. I just hope that the first half of the story isn't the same. Like, I hope it is actually a pretty much entirely new story, but looking at some of the cutscenes they showed, maybe that's not the case. Maybe you do have to play for the first half of the game again. But I bet it diverges. I bet there's like a fork where it really does go off in a different direction, because there's a new team of bad guys that they announced in the trailer as well. And everything's just as cutesy as it was in the original. And I don't know. I've been cynical today, but I kind of hope I have my heart warm with the stupid Pokemons. God, I think it looked really cool. I really like the story trailer. It sold me when I didn't think I could possibly be sold. The only issue is it's coming out like fucking 8 days after Mario, so I probably won't be able to play it anytime soon. But damn, I wasn't expecting them to like triple down or double down the story like they did in that trailer, and I'm excited. This could be really cool. So there you go. I just wanted to let people know, if you're open, if your heart has space for a 3DS game in 2017 and you like Pokemon, and especially if you didn't play Sun and Moon last year, this is a thing that you should probably check out. I really love Sun and Moon, and this is seems like the second gen ultra awesome reboot / refresh of that. That's totally probably going to worth be playing. Probably going to be worth playing. Moving on. Other bad news this week, and by bad news I don't mean Ultra Sun Moon, but more like the Visceral Games thing. This was, I think, 2 weeks ago, but Mike Laidlaw, the director of Dragon Age 1 and Jade Empire, and creative director, I think, for the whole Dragon Age series, of which the most recent was Dragon Age Inquisition, which is actually really freaking cool, has left BioWare. So Mike Laidlaw, Mike Laidlaw. That, I guess, shouldn't surprise me at this stage. I mean, freaking, it's BioWare, right? They're pretty much just, of recent years, made it a point of disappointing people. Wow, that's a rough thing to say. But after that Mass Effect game, fuck, man. It's a different team of people, I believe. The Dragon Age guys are the Dragon Age guys. They're a whole different team, and they've been working on Dragon Age stuff. But I really, really liked Dragon Age 1, and this guy directed that. And I think he really turned it around, considering he's the creative director of the whole series, if he has significant influence on Dragon Age Inquisition, because I really liked that game too. Nubarama also famously really likes that game. So, and yeah, just overall, like, it wasn't perfect by any means, but it was probably the best game that year. It was a pretty slow year, to be honest, but I really liked the characters. I really liked the storyline they crafted, even though it was like a one-off that didn't necessarily fit with anything else Dragon Age, really. It was great in really fun and cool ways, and had like a really cool twist at the ending, and apparently a pretty good bit of DLC there after that. So... yeah, if he's the guy who headed that overall team, I guess pretty sad seeing him leave, and makes me wonder what's happening with Dragon Age going forward. Considering how fucking dead Mass Effect is now, like, I'm not exactly expecting anything great from it, especially with this guy gone. But yeah, it's sad to see him leave. He's planning to spend time away from games for a while. He'll probably be back. Most people who leave games for a while end up coming back. Reminds me of like tennis players and stuff and sportsmen. But I don't know. It's just another piece of bad news. At the same time, it probably just puts someone else in his position, And maybe they do need more fresh blood. Maybe the industry just needs fresh blood in general across the board. So I'm not necessarily going to mourn the loss of a particularly great creator. It just gives more creatives a chance to stretch their wings. I'm not going to say and fly because that's lame. Moving on. The Switch, Nintendo Switch. I probably should have done this story near the other Switch news, but whatever. Nintendo Switch updates. For people who haven't touched their Switches in a while, like myself, the Nintendo Switch got a sweet new update. Well, I say sweet new update in that it's making it slightly more modern a console. To be fair, it's still pretty freaking awesome, even though it is 10 years behind in some ways. Essentially got an update that did a couple of cool things, and it was things that were beyond what they announced it to do, which is kind of the interesting part of it. So the announced features were video captures now in the system. So you long press the screen capture tool, which is in the circle button on the bottom left-hand corner of the device under the D-pad. If you hold that for a couple seconds, it does a 30-second video capture, which also has the ability to edit and cut, etc. And okay, the PlayStation 4 has a 20-minute or something, maybe a 10-minute or 20-minute video capture with the same thing. Fucking, this isn't new. And NVIDIA has done the same thing for their video drivers for quite a while now. So I'm not impressed, especially with 30 seconds as the fucking timestamp. But you know what? It's something, right? It's here for the Vine culture, even though I think Vine's gone, right? But whatever. It's got here for the Facebook video culture of today. Hopefully these things export animated GIFs. That would be pretty cool. Holy damn. It's just really hard to sit here and applaud them for putting in fucking video capture. And even beyond that, right? It's not even fucking enabled for every game by default. It has to be enabled on a game-by-game goddamn rollout process. At the moment, it's only even being enabled for Nintendo games because they're the only ones who are going back and patching the support in. Just across the board, it just seems laughable, to be honest. 30 seconds of video capture, geez. People use it. Some people use it, I guess. Good for them. Hope they have a good time. I don't know. I think that's dumb. The other piece of news here is that transfer of user data to a new Switch is now possible. So say for example you break your Switch and you have a new replacement one, you can now transfer your user data and save games to your new Switch. I found this news because I thought that was already in the system. Because it's fucking 2017, but apparently it's not. For Nintendo anyway. Until now, I guess. So the interesting thing here is not like cloud saves or anything. It's not like Steam or PlayStation Network or Xbox, where you can just save a game, then pick it up in a different Xbox in a different room, or transfer game saves between you and your friends, or have second installs of games on your partner's system in another part of the state or anything like that. This is literally just a fucking transfer from one Switch to another Switch, and once you do so, you can't go back. It's it's a one-off transfer, essentially a system transfer. Wow, I cannot applaud them. At least they fucking put it in now. We're sitting here in a world where cloud saves are pretty much the norm, and they're just putting in the ability to system transfer. But fuck, you know what? They didn't have it before. Now they have it. I can't complain. But I am just sitting here shrugging my shoulders going, well, fucking whoop-de-goddamn-do. Well done, I guess. You have a long way to go, Nintendo. You have a fucking long way to go when it comes to some of these things. But what? Whatever. Again, no reason to complain. This is the feature's now here, which is good. Only good news. The other things, however, are actually pretty cool. Again, not new things to the world, but new to Nintendo in a good way. The store of the Nintendo Switch has added two new things. It has pre-purchase and preload support now, which is great. That actually only came to PlayStation relatively recently. I think 2 years or 1 or 2 years from that. In the past, they added that feature. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the case, because Last of Us, that even the end of the PS3 era, you couldn't preload. You'd have to download that on the day, on release day. So yeah, like, this is pretty cool. I'm really happy that this is in the system now. Like, it's almost, if it wasn't an old feature on every other platform, I would say it's a forward-focused Nintendo move. Of these features that they've announced today, this is probably the most modern that they've added. And that's pretty cool, I guess. I'd love preloading. It's the only reason I would purchase a game, though I still insist that you should only purchase a game after you've seen reviews, and thus I would only preload something if the reviews have come out before the game came out, and therefore justified the preload / pre-purchase. With that disclaimer, this is cool. I'm happy it's in the system. I'm going to preload Mario. Thus breaking my rules, because I've already committed to this being my Mario. I'm buying this for other reasons than the game being good and reviewing well, so don't do as I say, not as I do in this case, I guess. Alright. The second change to the store they made was they added an on-sale section. What that means is essentially Nintendo is learning how to promote things that are discounted on their store, which is fucking awesome. Finally, this is a thing now for Nintendo. It also suggests that they'll be adding more things to the sale list on a weekly basis or monthly basis or whatever. It means that they'll have rotating sales, and that is really awesome. Everyone should follow the Steam sale model, not because it's necessarily good for developers, because that's pretty much up in the air. Some developers love it, some developers hate it. But it's really good for people like us who are buying video games, especially if it's controlled to the point where not every game inevitably goes on sale. Like, that's something that's, I think, has been rather destructive for the Steam store place. But having these rotating sales do really get you to, like, try out new things that you wouldn't necessarily try before, because it's so cheap and on sale. They really do boost purchases. A lot of developers see a second, like, boost of life when they go on sale on Steam, for example, and this is really good for that. Also, cheaper games. Overall, awesome thing for Nintendo to do. I'm really happy. The last thing, again, this is not in order, so it's the least impressive, I guess. They've added wireless headset support. What do you do? You still need a fucking USB-C adapter to plug in a USB 2.0 headset dongle. It's not like they added Bluetooth to the fucking thing, so you have to use a headset dongle via USB-C adapter if you're not plugging it into the actual dock. Enable to use your wireless headset, but hey, now you can use a wireless headset. Happy days. All right. More Switch news. And this is like one of the last bits of gaming news I have this week. Let me just double check. I might not have anything else. While I look this up, I'm just going to start talking. So the last piece of gaming news I have, I guess, is the Nintendo Switch sales. So over the last couple months, and this is kind of awesome to me, considering how much I like the system, even though I barely play it, is that they outsold both Sony and Microsoft. They sold, they've now sold 2 million units, Nintendo Switch units, in the US alone, which is incredibly impressive considering how few they've been manufacturing and how hard they are to find. And beyond that, like, they also freaking have, like, they've done that without any fucking games, right? Like, that's the craziest thing to me. Like, there's only Zelda, and they're already at 2 million in the US with barely any on shelves. I didn't even know what's happening with this thing. Like, I like the platform. I like it because I've always loved the idea of, I've always been a mobile game player, not mobile, but portable game player. I've always had, like, a Game Boy, a fucking 3DS, or fucking Vita. Like, I fucking own a Vita, for fuck's sake. And so, like, I love portable gaming, and being able to play full-size games like Persona 4 Golden has always been my jam. But seeing this thing take off like it is without any fucking games is freaking amazing, considering it came, like, we're talking about months where other big, like, Destiny 2 came out on fucking PS4, and this thing still outsold the PS4 for the month. To be fair, most people who would want that game on PS4 already own a PS4, but considering that the PS4 and Xbox One are the cheapest they've ever been, and this is usually the second half of console's life cycle is actually where the majority of the sales of that console happen. If not, a significant percentage, like 30 to 40%. Of all sales, lifetime sales, happened that last period. And this is against that, as a new system with only fucking one good game on it, as far as I'm concerned. That's really cool. Like, well done, Nintendo. 2 million. Anyway. And with that, though, that's the gaming news. I'm just scrolling through GameSpot now, and I don't really see anything. This fucking PS4 5.1 update, 5.01 update, doesn't seem to do much. I don't know. Metal Gear Survive has a release date. I'm not going to say it out loud. There's a video projector thing on Kickstarter for the Switch. Fucking whatever. That's it for the news this week. Before I go, I just want to have some like a quick talk here about the things coming up on Netflix. I don't know, it has nothing to do with video games, but whatever. It's things that excite me. Punisher has gotten a release date. We talked about it on the podcast before, but the Punisher, in my opinion, was by far the fucking best thing about Daredevil Season 2. In fact, I would suggest people just watch the first like 6 episodes of Daredevil Season 2 and not watch any of the rest of Daredevil if they don't want to, even though I kind of like Daredevil except for the second half of Season 2. Yeah, man, Punisher was freaking awesome in that. I was ultra unimpressed, though, with the first Punisher, Punisher trailer. I liked the teaser in... The Defenders, didn't like the first trailer, and I kind of still don't like the second trailer, to be honest. I feel like he had an emotional resonance to him during the Daredevil series that isn't coming through in these trailers. And these trailers just seems like a madman who just shoots dudes and is angry all the time, which I guess is Punisher's whole deal, but they did that in a really cool and interesting way with Daredevil, since they came into his story essentially halfway through. It's not his origin story or anything like that. It's just pretty much, this is Punisher punishing people, and this is why he does it, and you're getting used to him as a character, and he has a dog, and it's really fucking cool, right? I really like him in Daredevil, but this just seems like it's rewinding in a lot of lame ways, where it's just Frank Castle fucking murdering fools, which hopefully it's good. If anything, it can't be as bad as fucking Iron Fist. Like, there's no fucking way it's going to be as bad as fucking Iron Fist. So I'll watch it, considering I watched Iron Fist twice. To be fair, the second time was hate watching it, but still with friends. But but the funny thing is with this is that it is being announced for November 17th. And for anyone who isn't in the know when it comes to comic book movies, which is totally fair because they're kind of wearing on everyone by this point. November 17th is the same day that Justice League is coming out. So this is a bit of counter programming by Marvel and Netflix, which I can't find really humorous, because honestly, of the two, I'd probably watch Punisher. Only because I don't have to leave my house to fucking watch Punisher. I can just sit down on my fucking couch after work and watch that in one like big stretch, and that'd be really awesome. Whereas the Justice League, A, is probably going to be a fucking terrible movie looking at the fucking trailers for it. Sorry, DC fans, but I am not impressed. Hey, I'm hating on both today. Surprise. But yeah, B, like it's you have to go to a cinema and deal with that whole fucking business. I've watched every Marvel, like comic book movie this year at home, and honestly, it's been pretty good. Like, I love watching Guardians of the Galaxy at home to the point where I probably enjoyed it more than if I watched it at the cinemas, considering I'd already heard that it wasn't as good as Guardians 1, so my expectations were low going in. Anyway, interesting stuff. I like this move by Marvel because it's a dickhead move in a way I like seeing, because competition's always fun and good for most industries. I just don't know about this whole new Punisher thing. I don't know what they're doing to the character, or I don't know what they're undoing about the character, because I think the change of the character for Daredevil was a good thing, as opposed to going back to his normal shooting dudes in the face self. And with that, though, that's pretty much it. I don't really have anything else to talk about. That Black Panther trailer came out. That was pretty fucking cool. I really like what I see there. I think it looks really generic. Aside from the setting, it's like, this is a superhero story like every other superhero story, but it's set in Africa, you guys, and honestly, it's kind of cool. Like, At this point, anything's better than fucking the same old thing over and over again, I guess. And I really like the actor who plays, I don't remember his name, but I really like the actor who plays Black Panther. I really love the guy who's playing Killmonger? Warmonger? Fucking, I forget his name. It's Killmonger. Kilroy? Fuck it, I don't know. The bad guy in... the bad guy in Black Panther. He's the guy from... He's the boxer from Creed. He's that... fuck, I've forgotten his name. God, he's such a cool actor. But I forgot his name. I'm sorry. I apologize, but whatever. I like that guy. I like Andy Serkis. I like the guy who's playing the Black Panther himself. Everything about the movie looks cool. Bilbo's in it, so that can't possibly... I don't know. Over top of, like, again, it's essentially just going, hey, why don't we do the normal superhero thing, but in Africa? But honestly, it does actually look really cool. I'm down. I'm down for it. Kick-ass, bold female, bodyguards, and cool Creed dude in fucking Black Panther clothes, punching Black Panther. Yeah, I'll watch that. Why not? Aside from that, though, I still haven't had a chance to watch Blade Runner. So Thor is coming out soon, and I just don't know when I'll have time for any of this, because I essentially have two jobs at the moment with writing, etc. That's enough about me. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Cynical Supplement. Hopefully we'll come back this weekend with us talking about Mario. I'm hoping to get people to talk about that. Hopefully Squiddle and Durin will be able to make it, but no one can confirm at this stage. But aside from that, see you next time. And thanks again for listening, especially these weird rambling episodes. Anyway, bye. Half no face to show. Please don't take off.